Hi everyone and welcome to There's a Workshop for That. I'm Nathie Revez, your host and the founder of La Workshoppeuse. If you are as passionate as I am in the power of facilitation, you are in the right place. On this podcast, experts in the field join me to share their experiences, insights, and practical tips. So whether you're a seasoned facilitator or simply curious about how well-designed and facilitated workshops can transform teams and organizations, this podcast is for you. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episode. And if you like what you hear, please give it a 5-star on your podcast app. So now, sit back, relax, and let's dive into today's topic and meet our guest. Let's go! Hi, everybody. I hope you are all doing well. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Gwyn Warnsbrough. Gwyn and I have been crossing paths on LinkedIn for a while now, sharing the same kind of network of amazing facilitators. She has trained nearly 1,500 professionals to lead dynamic and engaging virtual sessions, bringing joy back into online working and learning. Gwyn is also recognized as a top facilitation voice. So if you want to get great tips, click the bell on her LinkedIn profile. And if you haven't already, I highly recommend watching her Butter Mixer session from 4 months ago. It's on YouTube, titled Facilitating Breakthroughs from Insights to Impact. Today, we'll dive into the differences between facilitating in-person and online workshops and what it takes to make your virtual session truly engaging and impactful with some fantastic tips along the way. Welcome, Gwyn.
Thank you so much, Nadi. It's such a pleasure to be here. I have been following you for such a long time, and it's a real pleasure to be here on the podcast.
Thank you so much. We are two blonde women with short hair. It's the first common thing. And I'm really, really glad that we finally connected because we have so much person in common on our LinkedIn profile, looking, chasing at each other. I'm very happy to have you here. Could you share a bit of your background and journey into facilitation?
Yeah, great. Well, I think like a lot of facilitators, I ended up in facilitation kind of by accident. I didn't even know facilitation was a thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I grew up in a family that liked to convene a lot. So my mom was a big convener. She always brought everybody from the neighborhood together and, you know, of these like meetings that we would have in our living rooms, all of a sudden there'd be like plans to build playgrounds and all kind of stuff. And my dad was the head of a school. And so a lot of his work was also facilitating and convening and kind of building the school community. So I feel like I was kind of immersed in that as a child, kind of watching a lot of that just unfold around me. But then fast forward several years, I remember I was living in Toronto at the time, and I was running a program for socially excluded young people in Toronto. And my husband actually told me, he said, there's a guy who's coming to do a workshop in something called facilitation. I met him the other day. He's amazing. You should go to this workshop. I had no idea what facilitation was, but I was running this program. I was trying, you know, with the staff of the program, we're always trying to see how we can engage, like more deeply engage young people in that were participating in the program. So I went out to this, it's called Creative Facilitation. It was run by a guy named Charlie Murphy, and it just blew my mind away. I just thought, wow, I'd never in my life, you know, at that time I was, you know, had done my schooling, my university, I'd done a master's degree, and I had never been so engaged in a learning experience as that 2-day workshop. So it really, you know, kind of clicked something inside of me, clicked. I thought, wow, you know, this is something I really want to learn how to do. And so as life kind of unfolded, ended up working with Charlie Murphy, who was really one of the most prolific facilitators that I had ever had the privilege of meeting and then working with, along with his co-founder, Peggy Taylor. And they introduced me to a whole world of facilitation. I worked very closely with them and an organization that they founded called Partners for Youth Empowerment that taught people, especially people who were working in the education space, adults, to how to create more dynamic, creative, engaging experiences, learning experiences for young people. And with Charlie and Peggy and a whole network of incredible facilitators all around the world, from South Africa to India to Singapore to the UK to the States to Canada, we created this global network of facilitators who were doing this kind of facilitation training. And then COVID hit. So everything, as it did for a lot of people, everything changed. And I was just actually leaving my work at Partners for Youth Empowerment when the pandemic hit. And I had a whole plan for myself of doing freelance facilitation work after leaving kind of the full-time position, intense position. We had been traveling a lot. You know, I was actually at that point, I was pretty exhausted, but I thought, you know, I'm going to carry on with the facilitation work. It's the work that I love to do. And then all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't possible anymore to do that in-person work. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I'll just have to retrain into something else because I'm not quite sure what's going to happen with facilitation. And one of the facilitation gigs I had already lined up was a facilitation. I'm actually in Barcelona, Spain, and it was with a group of 60 teachers in training who we were going to meet in Madrid and do a 2-day workshop. And all of a sudden that became a 1 hour or one and a half hour virtual workshop. And I said to the workshop organizers, I don't know how to do this. So you might have to find somebody else. And they're like, oh, let's just try it and see how it works. So we did. And I remember in that workshop, I just felt completely out of my comfort zone. I did not believe that you could do the same kind of meaningful work online as you could do in person. So I just resigned myself to the fact I was going to just suffer through, see what happens, you know, hopefully that it's not a complete disaster. And I remember in that workshop, a moment where I just wasn't sure whether people were paying attention, whether they were still with me, whether they were doing something else completely different. We were all in the midst of COVID on our screens. Zoom was new to a lot of people. I had been on Zoom for many, many years before that. And there was a time in the workshop where at the end of the workshop, I asked people just to put in the chat, you know, one word, how are you feeling as we come to the end of the workshop? And this cascade of responses started coming through, inspired and connected and energized and happy and all these things. And I was in the middle of lockdown here in Spain. And I just thought, oh my gosh, if we can figure this out and how to do it really well, so much is all of a sudden possible. And so that started really a very deep exploration for me in learning about how we can really design powerful experiences for people online.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had all this pass in during the pandemic, how to do that now, love in-person event. But I learned also to love the remote things and learn how to do it differently. Now, Do you think you can design and facilitate a remote workshop the same way you would do it for an in-person workshop? Or what should we do differently?
That is the crux of the question. I think where people have found that it gets very frustrating is when you try to do the same thing that you're used to doing in person online. And as workshop leaders, you get frustrated when you don't get that same level of engagement, or you don't feel like you're connecting with your group in the same way as you would in person. In my mind, they're very different experiences and they need to be designed in a different way. So if I am designing for a virtual workshop, there are certain things, certain very key differences in the virtual experience that I know that I need to design for. So for example, virtual audiences and virtual groups don't have the same kind of nonverbal cues. So our brains, when we enter any kind of a group experience, we're scanning for nonverbal cues. And those could be facial gestures or hand movements or body movements. In person, you get that information. And without even realizing it, you're actually answering yourself, is it worth me being here? You know, do I feel like, you know, am I motivated to engage? Virtual audiences come into a Zoom call or whatever kind of virtual call, and they're literally entering into a void. And but their brains are still scanning for that information, and they're not getting that information. So if you as the workshop leader aren't designing to make sure that your audience members are getting that same kind of assurance. Can I trust the facilitator? Is this worth my time? Do I belong in this group? Then it's going to be very difficult for your virtual participants to engage.
And how do you do this as a facilitator to make them feel they are right in the right place? They have a role to play there. How do you do that?
So this is what I love about virtual facilitation as well, is that it's so creative, you know, and I make a point of going to myself to a lot of virtual sessions just because I'm very curious about the ways that people do that at the very start of the session. So what I like to do is that I like to, first of all, you know, rewind to all of the pre-workshop communications. I think that's one of the things that I underestimated before when I started doing virtual workshops, how important it is that people get that orientation. What can they expect? How can they set themselves up to be in a really focused place when they get to the workshop? So I'd like to send an email, you know, to get the most out of the workshop. I highly recommend that you, you know, call in from a laptop or a desktop. You're in a quiet place. You join with your cameras on if that's possible for you, and just give people some context as, you know, what they're going to get into. Then I like to customize the waiting room. So that's your first, you know, that's your audience's first contact with the, you know, virtual part of the experience. And it's very simple to do, but it makes a huge difference. So I like to put a quote, you know, that's related to the workshop theme or photo or even a video, little message, you know, to people to be, you know, start welcoming them in. Then as soon as the call starts, right on the dot, start to engage people right away. So set the tone by welcoming people in by their names and then give people a first immediate opportunity to engage. And I usually like to do that in terms of a prompt question in the chat. Because that's a way also, if people are joining at different times, it's a rolling way where you can just, people can all already start to, you know, interact with each other. And it goes one step beyond, you know, your name, where you're from. I like to go one step further, which is asking them something that will allow them share something about themselves with the group that's related to the theme. So if we're doing a workshop where we're learning a new skill, it's like, what's a new skill you've learned lately? Or what's something new you've discovered lately? You know, I'm kind of getting people in, and you start to see so-and-so learned how to knit, you know, that's kind of cool. Or, you know, so-and-so learned a new recipe. Or, I mean, these are things on the personal level. You can do it also, you know, keeping it to the professional as well. What's a win that you've had last week? What's something new that you've learned that's really helped you in your job lately? Or, you know, whatever it is. And then getting people, you know, kind of just narrating responses if it's a big group. And then one other thing I like to do, just to really get people to start connecting with each other and getting all voices in the room, is that I like to invite people to turn their mics on and say hello in a way, in kind of like a fun and creative way. So usually it is, you know, a way that you would say hello to a really good friend wherever you live. And all of a sudden you start to see smiles, you know, on the screen. People are, it's amazing how used now we are to just the bog standard Zoom calls, you know, we're just going to suffer through them. You put in a few elements that are very low risk and very easy for people to engage with. And you've started your whole online virtual experience in a completely different way. That takes 5 minutes at the beginning of the call.
If I understand you well, the way you onboard the people before the session, and before the session means they know what will be talked about in this session. They know where they need to meet, who they will meet, who is the facilitator. Then onboard them a second time in the waiting room, and then really taking care of the 5 first minutes of your session so that they feel connected with the topic and with each other and with you as the facilitator. This is one of your best advice to start the virtual session in the future. So thank you for that. Thank you very, very much. Then you go into the topic. And when you design your 1 hour session, 2 hour session, 3 hour session, what do you need to really take care of? Because I'm thinking about the fact that when you are in a in-person room, you can feel the room, you can see if an breaks is needed or not. When you are online, your brain is working differently. Your attention is different. You are in front of a screen, whatever is happening there. So what are the things we need to be careful on when designing a session?
Wonderful. Love these questions. Yes, absolutely. So if the first big difference that I see is that, you know, you just don't have the same kind of nonverbal cues coming in, and you need to, you know, really warm things up for your virtual audience. The second huge difference that I see is that our brains, and it's not just what I see, it's actually, you know, Stanford University has studied all this stuff around Zoom fatigue and everything like that. Our brains have to work a lot harder in a virtual session. So it means that, for example, one of the biggest mistakes and one of the biggest challenges that a lot of virtual workshop leaders face is how to balance content and interaction. And so I think the old way is just to launch into content and just try to deliver as much content as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't work. It does not work in a virtual setting. So what it means in terms of designing your session is that you need to design in a few ways. One is that I like to start by asking and then tell. So something called ask, then tell. So before we launch into any content or anything like that, I like to survey the audience. So a quick poll, what's your comfort, you know, on a scale from 1 to 5, what's your comfort level with this topic in the chat or, you know, some kind of visual way? What are the biggest challenges that you're facing when it comes to this topic? Narrate some of the responses, and then contextualize. What are you hearing with how you are segueing into the content? So that's one thing, asking, then telling. It gets people involved in the content. It makes that content then relevant to them. And it's a lot easier, you know, for them to start entering into and absorbing what then, you know, you're going to be sharing with them. That's one thing. Another thing is bite-sizing your content. So with online, like you said, you know, online audiences are very easily distracted.
Yeah.
And our attention spans, I'm looking at a screen, I'm seeing my email, I'm seeing a bunch of people in a Zoom gallery space, I'm probably checking my Facebook on the side or doing something else. You are just competing with a lot of different distractions. But we know that online audiences just do not have the same kind of, it's much more difficult to focus for long periods of time. So I like to have as a general guiding principle, not to talk for any longer than 3 to 5 minutes. You know, 5 minutes would even be a long time. And then bookend all the concepts with interaction. So start with a poll, then introduce the theme. Go into a breakout, then come back and debrief the, you know, breakouts, whatever, but mixing up the methods, your interaction, and kind of going interaction, concept, interaction, concept, interaction, concept, and really breaking it down for that, like that.
When I design a virtual session, I made myself four cards. I call this my workshop dynamic cards. You have a card like top down. It means that I will explain something. Button up when there is a poll or something, people are responding. The interaction means on the breakout rooms when they will speak in smaller group. And the reflection is when they have to work on something themselves and put it on a mirror wall, for example. And it really helps me to see through these four colors through my workshops. If I have a dynamic that allows the workshop to not be boring and to switch the brain so that you have different things to do so that you still stay focused. I have also another rule. I don't know if it's right for you, but to make every 45 minutes a little pause or to ask a question like, do you need to take a coffee? We are also all different. You don't know in which area the people are. Are they home? Are they in the office? So it's another rule that I use.
I love that. Yeah.
And do you have some logistic house rules at the beginning, like put your camera on, or do you have things like this at the beginnings of your sessions?
I do, but just before we go there, because what you just said was I wanted just to pick up on the pausing and really designing the workshop with the experience of your virtual participants in mind. So I think sometimes what happens is that we feel like we're so under pressure to share as much valuable content as we possibly can. And we forget that it's a very different thing to be on the other side as the participant. And things like you said, scheduling in breaks, it's really important. Our brains are working a lot harder virtually than we would be even working in, you know, than they would be working in person. The other thing I wanted to just mention on that point was the power of movement. There's no rule that says we have to sit down for 3 hours in front of a screen in a virtual workshop. But I often say that movement is the virtual facilitator's secret weapon because so few people use it. And even just a simple, you don't even have to get up from your chair. It's better if you do, but even a simple stretch exercise. There's one that I love that's called Pass the Stretch.
Oh, let's do that.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to start us off or shall I?
Yeah, you start.
Okay. So I start and I do a stretch. We do the stretch together for about 10 seconds. And then you start a stretch and the whole group does the stretch that you're doing. Then you pass it off to the next person. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So here is my stretch. It's a shoulder stretch. And you just put your arms on your shoulders and stretch around.
We are stretching around our shoulders for those who are just listening and not watching on YouTube.
Hi, smile. And then it's over to you.
I love to do is the eyes rolling. You look up, you look on the right side, you look down, and you look on the left side. Again, up, on the right side, look down, and on the left side.
That's it. Love that. Oh, I've never done the eye rolling stretch before.
Yeah, you can do this then on the other side, then from up to down. I try to do this sometimes because the eyes, when you are looking at your screen, it's like the little eye gymnastic.
Love that. Love that. So sorry for that little detour, but I wanted to pick up on your really important point about pauses and just taking care of ourselves. It's the physical, it's the kind of mental effort that you have to make as a participant, and also the physical effort, because sitting in front of our computers can be very physically taxing. And like you said, you don't even know if people have been sitting in front of their computer for the last 6 hours already.
Exactly.
When they join your call. So often find that people are really appreciative of those opportunities just to do a little stretch or just have a little pause. So you were asking about Zoom instructions and cameras on. And so in, as we were talking about before, I tried to give people as much of a orientation as possible in an email before the session. And in that email, I will share some of the Zoom instructions so that people, you know, can kind of have a think about it first. Sometimes people get on the call and unless you've actually made it really explicit, like this is going to be an interactive workshop. We're going to be doing breakout groups. You know, we'd love for you to join with your cameras on. It makes a huge difference to our ability to connect. Then a lot of people are, if it's possible for them, very open to then say, okay, you know, I'm going to this workshop. Okay. It's going to be interactive. I better get myself set up so that I can participate in that way. Obviously, sometimes it's not possible for people to turn their cameras on. I remember I had one workshop where somebody was joining from Vietnam and she was in the same room as her sister who was sleeping. It was the middle of the night and she had gone on Zoom to connect to the workshop and she put in the chat, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to be able to speak or turn my camera on, but I'm very much here. And so as the workshop host, it's important to understand again, why vast circumstances.
Yeah.
Which is the beautiful thing about these virtual workshops is that all of a sudden it makes it possible for people to join who, you know, you don't need to travel across the world for a 2-day workshop, can dial in from wherever you are. So again, I think in those cases, it's setting some expectations and also being very open to understanding the reasons why people might not be able to turn on their cameras or they might not be able to join in the group discussion with their mics on. But then knowing that, you know, I'm also making sure that that person has some options in terms of participating in the chat, you know, being part of the group.
So nice. Great tip, Gwen. And now you've developed an online course. I know you just launched it. On facilitating remote workshops. Can you tell more about that? What to expect? Who is it made for? And where can you join?
Great. So I've just launched the course. I just launched it on Friday. It's a digital on-demand video course called Live Session Magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a course that focuses in on designing virtual experiences. So virtual sessions, whether they be courses or workshops, webinars, online events, any kind of online experience, group experience. So, you know, people who are doing group coaching sessions or trainers who do a lot of training sessions, even people who are doing, you know, product launches or, you know, webinars where you want to share a particular, you know, your expertise with a larger number of people. And the course goes through 8-step, step-by-step design system. So this is a system through this deep exploration of what really works in terms of virtual engagement. I've come up with an 8-step framework. It's called the Breakthrough Arc, and it's inspired by the very visionary work of organizations I used to work with, Dream a Dream and Partners for Youth Empowerment, and a facilitation mentor of mine, Nadia Cheney, who's just one of the most fabulous facilitators that I know. And it's it really is a design system. So I think sometimes what happens in virtual design is that you try to cobble things together. It's like something I call the patchwork problem. You want to, you know, I'll grab this, you know, icebreaker from here, or I'll do this, you know, kind of main activity, interactive activity. What Live Session Magic helps you do is come up with a complete experience, you know, figured out and a lot of research on, you know, what works, what doesn't. I've done a lot of trial and error through training 1500 online professionals and put my best advice into this course. So you get the 8-step framework. I've developed a session design template that you can use and adapt. We go through the common mistakes that people make in designing virtual sessions, what you should do instead. Lots of nuggets around, you know, designing those first 5 minutes, ways to connect your audience early and often, the CEO principle, things like the power prompt, craft a really powerful first opening prompt that really gets your online audience engaging, how to make your content more interactive, how to lead really deep group reflection online. So you're not faced with all the problem of crickets, you know, when you launch a question, how do you really effectively guide a virtual group through a deeper group discussion? And then how to close on an emotional high. So those are some of the things that you see inside of Live Session Magic. It's less about learning all of the tech tools, although I recommend my favorite digital tools. It's more about understanding the dynamics of how virtual audiences engage. And so how you can design really powerful online workshops for those audiences.
Wow. Thank you. We will put in the show notes all your contact, of course, how to join the course. Thank you so much, Gwen. It was such a pleasure.
A real, real pleasure. And Nadia, I just wanted to mention as well that for your audience, I'd like just to offer a $25 discount off of the course fee. So you'll find that, I think you'll find that coupon in the show notes. Yeah.
Very much for that.
Thank you. Thank you for all the amazing work that you do to help people also just design and lead spectacular, exceptional workshops.
And discover these great skills that can change everything, no matter what you are doing, even if you're not a facilitator. I love this.
That's right.
Thank you very much, Gwen, and have a great, great day.
Thank you, Nati. Take care.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't hesitate to contact our guest. You'll find all the information in the show notes. And hey, if you like the content of There's a Workshop for That, please give it a 5 stars on your podcast app. And you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, La Workshoppers. Also, I'd love to read your comments, suggestions of guests, or any question you have. For this, use the form called Hey Nati in the show notes. And until our next episode, I wish you good health, success, and lots of happiness. Au revoir!